Previously on Lost.
Do you really think all this is an accident? You think we crashed on this place by coincidence? Especially this place? We were brought here for a purpose, for a reason, all of us. Each one of us was brought here for a reason.
Brought here. And who brought us here, Jeff?
Morse?
Subway, do you know who I am? I'm one of the Oceanic Six!
You gotta find me, John. You gotta find me. And when you do, you'll find him.
Who?
Jacob.
I think we did the right thing, Jack. I think he wants us to come back.
Two players. Two sides. One is light. One is dark.
I see you in another life, brother. We have to go back! We have to go back! We have to go back! We have to go back!
Hello and welcome to The Storm, a Lost rewatch podcast for Season 4, Episode 7, Gion. And hey, you're buying a stuffed what? As a gift for a potential business partner's child. My name is Dave Gonzalez, one of your three hosts, and this child gets a child, Star Wars style. Baby that thing he's not a baby of.
For the layman, Baby Yoda. my name is Joanna Robinson. I'm another one of your hosts. And I would get a stuffed cow, but let me explain. My friend Nate, who you guys have met, Nate, friend of the pod, has this thing that he gets for every single baby that he knows that it's born. And it's a stuffed cow, and then a copy of the book, Is That My Cow? Which is a kid's book that's taken from a Terry Pratchett book. It's like a fictional kid's book that's inside, and then they made the actual book. Anyway, he gets them a cow, and then the book, Is That My Cow or Is That My Coo? If you read it in the native Scots. And I just think it's incredibly cute and consistent, and I wish I had one consistent present I got every baby. So I'll just, in this fantasy world, steal Nate's consistency, and I'm done.
Nice. And I'm Neil Miller, and I guess I'm just going to take the dragon, because if there's anything consistent about me, it's that, I don't know, if there's an easy answer there, I'm just going to take it. And for Jin,
it's the year of the dragon.
Just the dragon. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just get the dragon. It's fine. I don't know. Anyway.
If this is your first time joining us, welcome. This podcast is an ideal companion if you're rewatching the ABC series Lost with us or visiting the island for the very first time, because each episode comes in sections for your listening pleasure. First, there will be a calm section that only discusses the preceding episodes and avoids all spoilers of other episodes. And then a second section called The Storm. It's a storm of spoilers discussing this week's episode in the context of the entire series and over a decade of Lost fandom. We're deep in season 4, and the show itself is up to some trickery this week. Make sure to stay tuned. You can look at your podcasting device and see time codes that denote the calm and the storm, so you could not drift into one while skipping around. I don't know why you do that. Maybe you could do that. Do what you want. Because we're just happy that you're listening to the show, first of all. But if you would like to support us in our ongoing endeavor to watch all of Lost during a pandemic, go to patreon.com/stormofspoilers. There you will see bonus content that you could buy into for a monthly donation. There are bonus podcasts. There are watch-alongs. There is access to a Slack full of listeners like you that are doing great things for each other and with us, watching each episode of Lost on Saturdays at the very minimum. But also, they sometimes watch movies with Joanna and Kristen from the Buffering Podcast. And as they are breaching 80s fantasy as we speak. Joanna, what feels like the first time?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, so really quickly, if you don't listen to the show every week, feels like the first time is something I do with Kristen from the Buffering Podcast, where I show her movies she's never seen. We talk about them before. We talk about them after. We are knee-deep in glitter and thigh oil fantasy 80s movies.
Okay.
I did not like noticed this trend when I picked the three movies, but we have watched with, you know, a group of listeners from the Storm podcast and the Buffering podcast over the last couple of days. We have watched Tom Cruise in Legend and The Beastmaster was last night. And it's just, there's just so much thigh, a man thigh in these movies. It's preposterous and delightful, and ferrets and glitter. And then we're wrapping it all up with Willow tomorrow night. So that is the fantasy trilogy that we are dealing with right now. But there will definitely be an 80s fantasy trilogy part two, because as some of our listeners pointed out, I didn't pick Lady Hawk. So, you know, we'll get to that. Fewer thighs in that one, unless you're counting actual bird thighs. So anyway, that feels like the first time. That's something you can listen to if you subscribe to either of our Patreons, the Buffering or the Storm Patreon, and you can join us and live watch movies with us as we scream about thigh oil. I mean, what else? What more could you want, really? I know Dave already mentioned that we do Lost live watches on Saturday. He's running the live watch this Saturday. We're going to meet Kevin Johnson, who we technically meet at the very end of this episode, but we'll meet him for realsies next week. So there is that to look forward to. That's not the only way to hang out with us. Obviously, you can always email us. We got a bunch of fresh new emails. Thank you guys so much. You heard my pleas last week for emails. So thank you all for writing in. We got a bunch, like more than I can get to. But I'm going to do a better job of like bookmarking them and coming back to them. And we'll get to all of them. But keep them coming. They're all great. I appreciate you. Let me just read a couple right now, shall I? Okay. Mm-hmm. So we're gonna start with a couple to address a concern of Dave's. This is from I think Raimi is the name of this person. Love the long episodes. Hello and welcome to a super short email advocating for super long episodes. I have so much more to say to my favorite podcast trio. Eventually I'll write that email. But just want to say that in my humble opinion, there is no need at all to tighten it up. You're my number one COVID comfort listen, and there can never be too much. Thanks for all you do. Have an amazingly fun and safe Thanksgiving. Hugs to you all. Raimi, who once left so hard during the pod that I fell over a dog gate and threw out my back. Don't fall down. So.
Oh, no.
Oh, my gosh.
He threw out his back. They threw out their back for the cause. So, you know, give them a longer episode.
So loosen up.
Here's one from Ashley Olson. No relation. Longer episodes. Hello. Yes, yes. Longer episodes. More spoiler talk. There are many months more of quarantine ahead, and I need the company of as many long podcasts as possible. I don't have a spoiler prompt, but I will say that I feel like there were some previous episodes where Joanna stated that she had some spoiler emails or more spoiler emails that she didn't have time to get through. Did we talk about all of those already? I don't care if it's season 2, episode 9 spoiler email. I just like hearing other people's theories and thoughts. Talk about all of it. Maybe do more D&D alignment characters. I don't even know D&D, but like hearing you guys talk about the alignment and learn more about it that way. Thanks for the great show. Don't fall down. Ashley Olson, not that one. Oh, she made the no relation joke before I did. Sorry. I should have just waited for Ashley to make that joke. Yes, I think a Thanksgiving resolution I have is to do a deep forensic dive into our email and sort of pull up some of those old emails. That's a great idea, Ashley. Thank you so much. All right. We're going to do this email from Anna. She's from Sydney.
All right.
She says, "Hi, Joanna, Dave, and Neil. I suspect you will not take up this challenge, but feel free to read this in Australian accent." I'm not going to do it because that was just like, that was chimney sweep right out the gate, which is not what I was going
right
for.
Right to the beans.
Crikey. All right. So Anna
I'm
writes.
I'm so sorry, Anna.
No, I'm so sorry, the nation of Australia. All right. My friend and I are wrapping up his very first watch of Buffy and Angel, and much to my delight, he suggested that our next show should be Lost. Since you asked for it, I thought I'd find out what he currently knows about the show, having watched only the first couple episodes many years ago. He said, "I know there's a plane crash and weird stuff happens on the island. It's creepy and haunted, question mark. People disappear and stuff, question mark. There's a guy who likes knives and a doctor and that Korean guy. Oh, when people were salty about the ending. There's a guy with an annoying kid, I think. Maybe that's a different show." And then this is back. This is back to Anna. I must say, I was rather offended by him referring to Daniel Dae Kim as that Korean guy, given that all I could talk about is how handsome he is every time he appears on Angel. I'm very much looking forward to future arguments about inconsistencies and vanishing plot threads and just why it is that I love Sawyer so much. Hopefully I can convince him to listen to the podcast as well. If so, hi, future Shane. I also have a question for all of you. If you could do so, which character would you convince or force to miss Flight 815? I would save Libby and have her team up with Penny to find the survivors, and maybe she just really wants her boat back. She would still be able to meet Hurley, as he is one of the Oceanic Six, and we might get to explore some of the mysteries surrounding her. Thank you for providing me with great entertainment every Thursday morning, my time. I love that each of you bring a different perspective to your discussion of the show. While I'm firmly in Joanna's corner most of the time, character stuff is always what I look for. It's always great to broaden your view of one of your favorite shows. Lots of love and have a brilliant day, Anna. So thank you, Anna. Once again, sorry for the accent. Which oceanic passenger would you dissuade from getting on the flight, Dave?
Oh, man. That's tough. I feel like a lot of them, you know, have some very key life moments, like a lot of our main cast. So I'm going to save you, Joanna. I'm going to save Joanna. She went too early, and we could have spared her and
that
also
so
kept our narrative
nice.
In place.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, Neil, top that.
Yeah. Well, I feel like, you know, somewhere buried in that question is the, you know, the desire to see us pick a, you know, like a main character. So I'm going to take Kate for one specific reason, because it would kick off a spin-off movie in which Kate gets away from the Marshal before getting on Flight 815 and then has to be tracked through like the Australian, just through cities and outback, and she's on the run again in Australia, and that's a whole movie. And it's kind of like Mad Max, but more modern day, but with Kate. I think that would be great.
Kate on the run.
Exactly.
Like that? Oh. It would be like a Fire Walkabout with me.
Once again, apologies to Australia. Yeah, who would I pick? I think it's a good move to pick someone who like has died already on the show so that we could save them. Mm-hmm. But you're right that like I wouldn't take Charlie's arc away from him, you know, necessarily. So, I mean, maybe I would stop Walt because he's like a literal child. Mm-hmm. Or any of those those kids that got other napped from the Tailey section.
Ooh, yeah, the kids.
The kids. Or Claire. Because, listen, like, having a baby on an island sounds awful. So I'd let Claire give birth not on an island is what I would do. So. I mean, baby, that was all baby kid focus, but maybe apropos for this episode. Okay, I have one more email and then another one that I'm going to save for, I'm going to integrate it into our discussion. But we've got an email from Aaron who did a reaction to The Other Woman, which is last week's episode. So I figure we should get to it. And the title of his email is, this email is like the constant because it's going to jump around a bit. Aaron writes, hi host, probably could have posted this over in the Slack, but hey, nobody writes emails anymore. They're so old fashioned. So here's a jumble of things. This week's pod prompt. I don't have much to say regarding how the quarantine has changed my outlook on being stuck on an island. My question would be, not that I'd assume any of the hosts would necessarily know, if any of the Lost creators were familiar with Fallout. Also curious if the Westworld creators played Red Dead Redemption. For more questions you probably don't have answers to. So anyone have any thoughts about Fallout and its connection to Lost?
I don't. I feel like the showrunners did not play it. But that's just my feeling of being somewhat familiar with Carlton Cuse and Damon Lindelof in this period of their life. I'm guessing they're not taking time out to play Fallout.
Okay.
Oh, but I mean, if we're talking about the comparisons, yes, we should probably touch on that at some point.
Someone also, you know, one of our Stormies, so like a longtime Lost fan, is I saw in our Slack was like a little irked, maybe irked is too strong, was a little curious why we hadn't done an episode on the missing pieces, which aired, I think, before season four. So I don't know if we want to try to, I think we excuse me, we mentioned them from time to time. So, but I don't know if we want to do a whole episode on it or maybe think about integrating it. I don't know. We'll discuss.
we have talked about in the past if we wanted to stop and do like an ARG / clips sort of thing. And I think the main concern we had is assembling them in a concise way and then finding a place for them. But we'll definitely circle back to that if that's something we're looking into.
That sounds great. All right, back to Aaron's email. On the island of mystery being the North Pole, with tweaks, the constant could totally have been a Hallmark Christmas movie. 14 years of marriage has shown me time travel is old hat in Hallmark / Lifetime land. Kate and Sawyer each independently had backstories that would work in any number of Learn the Meaning of Christmas TV flicks. Redemption arc sell. Hurley could be in something with Santa Claus. I would love to watch a Hurley Santa Claus buddy comedy. Like, give me Kurt Russell Santa Claus from the Christmas Chronicles plus Hurley. Yes, would watch 10 out of 10. Tech gripe of the week from Aaron for the other woman. The physics guy, that's Daniel Faraday, isn't going to work on / hack the chemical control system. He's a PhD in time studies. He has grad students for the grunt work. So that is tech gripe.
I think this just is a lack of confidence in our guy Daniel, and I'm not going to stand for it. I believe Dan can do any science thing. That's why he's Dan the science man.
I don't think we've learned this yet, but Dan has other skills. We'll get there. All right. Mm-hmm. Harper, she is this episode of Therapist. It would suck though to have to live and work with your ex if they went the divorce route. I'm not reading every point on Aaron's email, but I'm reading this point to remind me to talk about a tweet we got, because you know how we did like Where's Libby for like a year, a season, and then like retired it this season, right? But this was that would have been a really good week to do Where's Libby, because Where's Libby, she's giving therapy to all the others who had bad therapy from Harper. Come get good therapy from Libby. Maybe. She wasn't the best therapist to Hurley, but she has to be better than Harper. That's a low bar. Okay. Aaron does not agree with me that the Tempest maps to Lost, but he does suggest watching Greenway's Prospero's books, which I did watch in school, actually. But if you haven't watched Prospero's books, light up your legal drug of choice and watch Prospero's books. It's a good time. Creepy incel Ben is the second worst thing in Lost. I can't read what the first worst thing is because it's a spoiler, but I'll drop it in the storm section. Argument that Harper's on the and then Aaron says if he had been in charge, it feels like the first time Fantasy Edition, he would have done Clash of the Titans, Conan the Barbarian, and Lady Hawk. So there you go, another vote for Lady Hawk. So that is Aaron's constantly jumping around email. I've got a couple more that I will be reading in integration with our discussion. But let me hit, I'm sorry, this section is taking so long. Let me hit our reviews really quickly. Because we got three of them after I begged for reviews and I would hate not to read them. So Joanna's Mike ?5 stars is from Nancy. And Nancy says, for the last few episodes, Joanna's voice trails, making some parts inaudible. Maybe a mic issue. Can't hear her, but David Neal's volume doesn't change. But yeah, 5 stars. So I don't know what the answer to that is. I will try not. I bet it's me moving my head more than a mic issue. So I will try to do that less. But if other people have heard that, please do write in. Let me know if there's a tech issue that needs more serious addressing. This one's 5 stars. The storm of what I needed. With craziness of this year being what it is, I thought I would be rewatching my favorite comfort show Lost over and over again just to keep my anxiety from boiling over. Instead, I found this podcast with 3 equally lovable hosts. As a strong Charlie supporter, except when he kidnaps the baby, I found the immediate need to catch up to where you guys were after finding you a bit late to the party. I just had to hear your opinions on the season 3 finale. Though I may disagree on some of the opposition to one of, if not my favorite character on the show, I appreciate the conversation in general as you dissect old media. P.S. This podcast has ruined Jack for me, so potential listeners, prepare for that. And despite Dave's best effort, solidified Locke is a protagonist in my eyes. So that is from M. Even 1223.
I shake my fist at the sky.
And the last one is from Nothing But the Rain 33. That's a Battlestar reference, right? 5 stars. Sawyer rules. Mm-hmm. Jack drools. Also, the podcast rules. I'm so glad I discovered this delightful little gem about one of my all-time favorite shows, Lost. All the hosts are just fantastic, and I love the structure of how they split the podcast between the calm and the storm. No spoilers / spoilers. I've listened to other podcasts that take one route or the other for various shows, and I find myself really wishing for the both /and we get on the storm. Getting to process an episode on its own terms, just up to that point, is really helpful and grounded, even as someone who has seen the whole show multiple times, so then there's still room for spoilery randomness. Best of both worlds. Also, I just have to add that all three hosts bring such interesting, thoughtful, unique, and sometimes hilarious takes to each episode. I rarely get through one without laughing out loud, and I always learn something. If you love Lost and love podcasts, here's your constant. Keep being yourselves, Joanna, Dave, and Neil. Thanks for making they meant to write 2020 a little bit more tolerable, giving me something to look forward to every Wednesday and Thursday. Let's be real, I'm all in on the bonus pods. Oh, thank you. So those are our reviews. Those are some of our emails. We will have more emails and some storm emails. Thank you all so much. I think that's it. Go to our Twitter @StormPodcast for our history stuff. Watch Meet Kevin Johnson this Saturday with Dave. Our Slack book club is wrapping up the year with Dash and Lily, which we're discussing on November 30th. And that is it for me. So now my question is, Neil, what happened mm-hmm. on Lost this week?
Well, this week we had gathered to talk about Ji-Un, an episode that was directed by Stephen Semmel. It was written by Edward Kitsis and Adam Horowitz, who you've heard of before. It aired on March 13th, 2008, and it takes place on days 95 and 96 on the island, which I believe are Christmas Day and the day after Christmas, chronologically. In flashbacks, yes, flashbacks, Jin has a wacky adventure as he attempts to purchase and deliver a large stuffed panda to an ambassador on behalf of his new father-in-law and boss, a.k.a. son's dad. This takes place in the Year of the Dragon, which means it's somewhere between February 2000 and January 2001. In flash forwards, we watch as Sun, the fifth confirmed member of the Oceanic Six, heads to the hospital to give birth to her daughter. Jin is not there, which is something we'll come back to. On the island, Sun and Jin are there at the beach camp, and they're debating whether to stay with Jack and Juliet and the freighter crew, or await rescue, or head into the jungle toward John Locke's Darmaville commune. After Sun decides that it's time to get away from the freighter crew and their poison gas-related side plots, Juliet gets involved, and it goes mostly fine until she straight up tells Jin about Sun's affair with Smooth Boy.
Smooth Boy Charlie.
It's a decidedly strong approach, but after a heartfelt apology, Juliet does convince Sun to remain at the beach camp. On the freighter, Desmond and Saeed witness Regina, who we just met, jumping to her death. Then they meet the unexpectedly calm, handsome captain. He shows up to dish all kinds of details about cabin fever and Charles Widmore, the fake Flight 815 wreckage, and his mission to capture Ben Linus. They also meet another member of the crew, Kevin Johnson, who is actually Michael. Yeah, it's just Michael. he's there.
Making his second return to Lost.
The whole thing ends with Hurley showing up to meet baby Ji-Yun, who is absolutely adorable. He then accompanies Sun and the baby to the cemetery where they visit Jin's gravestone because, as you might have figured at this point, Jin is dead in the future, which is very sad. Fun fact. Here's a fun fact to go with that sad ending. It has been 29 episodes since we last saw Michael. The last episode in which he appeared was Live Together, Die Alone, which is the 23rd episode of season 2. And in podcast time, that was April 29th of 2020 was when we dropped the episode for that.
So we're like, man, that quarantine was tough. I bet we're almost out of it now.
Yeah. So it's 29 episodes, or in 2020 time, 6 years ago. So this week's column question, kind of wanted to start here because, as I noted subtly in my description of this episode is the first of its kind to use a flashback and a flash forward. So I just want to kind of start with what do you think of that? Let's start with Joanna.
Okay. So I love this episode. I love this episode. Mm-hmm. I cry every time I watch it. I cried like 4 times when we watched it on Saturday. I love this episode. I think the flashback thing is kind of cheap. I mean, anyone who's salty about the flashback and the tricksiness of it, I hear you. I have no argument against you, but I don't think it undercuts. I don't think the episode pivots on the flashback, because no matter what, like, no matter what, Jin has missed the birth of his child. And that, in contrast mm-hmm. to the conversations that we see on the island, is heartbreaking. And no matter what, Sun is grieving the loss of him at the end of the episode and when Hurley shows up. And no matter what, Jin has been on a journey from the shitty dude he was trying to get the panda and stuff like that. And so all of that is still true emotionally. And so it does not, for me, undercut the emotion of the episode and the character work of the episode. And for, you know, it doesn't feel like a betrayal of that, because like what Jin is like, I think what's important for me to not be like so salty about the flashback is that what Jin is going through in that flashback is not emotion. It's not necessary that we really understand where he is emotionally when it happens, because it's so like kind of silly and slapstick. And so it's not like we're gutted because we thought we were watching one thing or we were watching another. We did, but like that information doesn't change the power of this episode. So do I think it's kind of cheap? Yes. Do I still think this is like an all-timer lost episode? I do. So that's where I am on that.
Nice. Dave, what do you think?
I definitely think it's kind of cheap. The thing that got me thinking, I think, better about it on the rewatch is we're all shook up in time. We kind of don't know it yet. Like, we are with the characters at this point, both the characters on the freighter and the characters on the beach, where it's like, we know there's something wrong. You look around, there's something wrong, but no one could put their finger on it, and none of them know that they're all in different times. The freighter is at least partially off from the beach. The flashback and the flash forward separate, and so every time we jump to a location, all we have to grab onto in those locations are what we know about the characters, which I think is completely intentional, because the freighter ends with Kevin Johnson, which is sort of like a regrounding when we're really swimming in the information disinformation boat of mystery off the shore of the island of mystery sort of thing. So I'm the more I rewatch it, the more I could see the hour-long episode trying to be a whole while also being cheap, because Joanna's right, if they wanted to pick like a Jin flashback that worked on a level more than just sort of a tease, I think they could have put a little bit more elbow grease and maybe found something that maybe could have deepened like their beach conversations. Like, I mm-hmm. think, the Sun stuff deepens the beach conversations.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I probably remember this episode not quite as fondly, like from the original lot, you know, watching it while it was airing. And mostly because I thought it was the flashback was kind of cheap, and it also it injects it's a very chaotic episode to a certain extent until they get to the end and they have this you know, it's weird to me that like the Michael reveal happens like several minutes before the episode ends, but they have this really sweet scene at the end that totally sort of washes that away. But yeah, I think the more I rewatch the flashback, the more fun it is, because there are, as you mentioned, there's a ton of hints as to what, specific to the Jin story, you know, the year of the dragon thing, the guy mentioning that, that being a specific time frame in, you know, 2000, 2001, Jin being, you know, really aggressive and angry and, you know, his giant cell phone. So it was a lot of fun to go back and watch that. And I think, you know, it's the, like Dave said, the more, every time I watch this episode, I appreciate it a little bit more for how like weird and chaotic, but also, like Joanna said, waterworksy.
I'm crying this right whole now, thing honestly. I really am. Like, I was just sitting here thinking about Hurley and Son at the end, and I just started crying.
Right?
I think if this episode didn't have that Hurley buttoned, like, Hurley makes everything better, right? But I think if this episode didn't have the Hurley button, I would be probably angrier about the twist. But like Hurley showing up and me just like actively like sobbing my way through that whole sequence where you know, he's like, you know, he asks if anyone else has come. And she says no, and he says good. So, like, it, you know, that gives us some intrigue of, like, oh, is there drama in the Oceanic Six? Probably. But, like, also his joy in just being alone with her and her joy in seeing him calling the baby awesome. And then him saying, like, guess we should go see him. And then they go to a grave, and it's just, like, it's so beautiful and so sad. And, yeah, I'm literally tears are streaming down my. I'm like, this is a real Mallory Rubin move for me to be like crying on the podcast, but I am. So,
yeah. it makes the Panda Express storyline slight, which is fine. And then it's like, I get what Neil is pointing out too. It's like they're trying to drop hints and stuff, but a lot of that also kind of like goes out in the wash of how many production errors there also are in that period of time.
You can see it if you rewatch the episode, but like I don't, you know, and like some of our sharper watchers, you know, we've got some calm folks who are watching with us who are really fluent in the language of television, and so they were immediately skeptical that like Sun and Jin weren't being shown together, you know what I mean? And so I think in the language of television now, like, you know, and Lost has earned skepticism from its viewers, so I don't think it's going to be able to pull the wool over as easily as it might have when it originally aired. To that point, I have an email that I would love to read right here, if that's okay with you guys. It's on this note, and it's from Shreya, whose twin sister Shruti is the one who like came up with us having the Saturday Live watches. They're both extremely valuable members of our Slack community, as is everyone who's a member of our Slack community. But Shreya and Shruti have a special place in my heart because I teased them once at a live Con of Thrones panel, and they were total champs about it. So,
I remember that.
All right. So Shreya writes, "I love the Storm Pod being part of the Slack and everything else that you do. I figured I should finally write in as well. This email might seem unrelated to Lost, but I promise it's relevant. I like the second season of Big Little Lies better than the first. My twin sister Shruti always tells me nobody else thinks the second season is better, but I like it better because I find the time jumps in season one a bit frustrating. The linear storyline that is an abusive husband attempting to attack a woman and was killed in self-defense. By withholding bits of information, the writers created an artificial sense of mystery. Who is the murderer? Who died? This frustrated me because it felt like the story was pretending to be more shocking than it was in reality. Similarly, I got frustrated by this episode," meaning Gian. "When we don't see Sun and Jin together in flashes, we realize something's up. The flashback / flash forward reveal, therefore, felt unearned. I feel like it would have felt much more emotional and shocking to actually see Jin die, which is why Shruti thinks Jin is still alive. For the most part, I appreciate the way time flashes and Lost are executed, but I wanted to ask you if you ever get frustrated by this form of storytelling. Thanks again for all you do. This pod and having a commie way of watching Lost in 2020 is incredible. I love that I can watch Lost week by week, 16 years after it aired, and get to discuss theories for hours with Shruti and the rest of the Slack. I really appreciate this amazing project and all your work that makes this possible. Thanks, Shreya." So thank you, Shreya. I'll just say my immediate answer to this question is that I think it depends. And I think we've been discussing this week by week. I think there are some times when the flashbacks feel like a frustrating distraction. Like, I think the flashback stuff in the Juliet episode last week doesn't really work to do anything to enhance the story. And so in that case, it's frustrating. But in some other episodes, like, you know, Walkabout is one that people reference a lot. But there are plenty of episodes where visiting the backstory of someone works in beautiful harmony with what's going on the island in a way that just creates this incredible story. And that's the kind of storytelling that Lost wants to be at its best, which is like, these assumptions you thought you had about this character, what if we showed you a different side? And what if knowing that internal life of that character helped you better understand their choices and decisions that they're making on this weird island adventure they found themselves on? That's the concept. It doesn't always work. And when it doesn't work, it's annoying. And when it does work, it's magic. So that's what I think. What do you guys think?
Yeah. I mean, I agree. And it's still worth shooting for the magic, I think, because when they nail it, especially Lost, they really nail it. I also think that this is something that I struggle with more, or that annoys me more, you know, when I'm watching a show live or the first time around, especially when you're like mid season, because it's important to remember we're like right in the middle of season four. And so you don't really know yet what exactly is super important, you know, for later episodes. So I think it's one of those things that there are certain episodes like this one that will age better the more you get to rewatch them and in context of with the rest of and then there's some episodes that require, you know, greater context of longer seasons and different arcs, and those remain, I would say, more frustrating when it takes longer to get the payoff. But, you know, I don't know. Lost is pretty good. Trust him to make good decisions here.
Dave?
What if the other woman was before the constant is what I constantly am wondering. Mm. Hey, what I've been wondering this week, because I really do think this whole flashback, flash forward, we could flash wherever we want, like that's the hand of God narrative tool on this season, is I think a little bit they're trying out different ways to use it, and a lot of the ways that you could use just montage in its basic form are kind of tricksy to begin with. To, I guess, answer the email's questions on a non-Lost point, because I do think Lost-wise, I think this episode's supposed to make you kind of feel unstuck in time, which is why I want it closer to the constant. But in terms of television, the time that this has happened and that I've been completely not in favor of it because it just made everything more confusing was the premiere episode of season four of The Venture Brothers. We had waited like several years to figure out what was going to happen after the end of season three. And the premiere episode is out of order, and its sequences are only timed by the CGC rating of a comic book that appears in the episode. So there'll be a little thing at the corner that says like CGC 9.6, and you're supposed to know that that means that the comic book is not damaged, and then it goes all the way to zero, but it jumps around and all it has is this CGC rating in the corner, and it's just to be nerdy, and it does nothing to like elevate the storytelling. Now I really like it because it's like a big swing to do a fourth season premiere of an animated show that way, but I do think it's something similar to Lost where it's like, all right, we're going to have as much fun with structure as we can and figure out where the borders of this thing are, because we've already figured out where the bottom of the flashback hole is. So let's see what other things we can
play. So like the flash forward thing at the end of season three is great, I think. And then the time hop of the constant, I think, is also great. And so I think this is just less successful.
It's trying to do both those at the same time, because the Jin thing is the less successful Jack reveal.
Right.
Because we just don't know what time period it's in.
So it's, you know, I feel like I don't know if they looked at this and were like, well, we won't do that again. But like, you know, this isn't the last of time shenanigans necessarily. And I think people look back on this because I think some later Lost stuff is less emotionally successful in some of their hijinks. So we'll get to all of that eventually as we cover it. And so then I think Ji-Yun gets lumped in with like, you know, the shakier version of Lost. And I will just forever insist that it is a very strong episode. Speaking of timey-wimey stuff, I have one last email that I just want to reference. I'm not going to read the whole email, but I'm going to send you guys something in a Skype chat right now for you to look at. It's a photo sent by one of our listeners. This is from Alexander, who wrote in and sent in a photo of a matching tattoo he has with his wife that says, "You are my constant," and they have it on their forearms. He just wrote, "The show is the first thing my wife and I had in common 12 or 13 years ago. She's 26 and I'm turning 29. To hear y'all is were they teenage sweethearts? That's adorable. To hear y'all is a breath of fresh air. I titled this The Consciousness just to show off our tattoos we got 2 years ago." And then he goes on to he's not a fan of Kate. Thinks we should give Michael Emerson even more credit than we already do. So those are all things, opinions that Alexander has. And then he also goes on to say that they're expecting a baby. And if it's a boy, he's going to be named Desmond. So that's just like, this show.
Little Des self-perpetuating himself throughout time.
The fandom of this show, the show means so much to so many people, and it means a lot to me personally that you guys are choosing to like go back through something you love so much with us. So thank you for spending your time with us. That's all I have to say. All right.
Nice. There's a reminder here that speaking of Desmond, Michael actually never met Desmond because of his various missions and Desmond's attempts to get off the island and sail the first time. So this is a Michael meeting Desmond for the first time. Two main characters of Lost actually get to meet. But it's also our Carl's Coming Right Now Act Break Award to Saeed, who reaches out his hand and says, nice to meet you, Kevin. And we're like, oh my God, I can't believe what happens next. And what happens next is we have to cry again is what happens next. So we don't get to figure out any more about Kevin Johnson until next week. But that is our moment, best actor.
That's why he's giving Saeed the whole like, don't fuck this up for me, and he doesn't have to give Desmond the same.
I mean, it's also Michael, so he's like, he looks at Saeed and he's like, all right, he's very good, so I could still be subtle about this. And Saeed picks up on it. Of course he does. Just good. Yeah, Saeed's still not dropping the ball on the boat. Speaking of the boat, we finally get to meet Regina, who is stuntwoman actress Zoe Bell, who, first, I think, came to like popular attention, or at least to my attention, hanging off Cars and Death Proof. Yes. And then I got to go back and forward and everywhere and became a large fan up to Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, I think, is the most recent thing she's been in. Unless I've missed a 2020 movie because it went into VOD or the festival I didn't get to see. So she pops up reading a book upside down. And I'm like, oh, man, you don't have Zoe Bell unless she's doing some crazy stunt. But this was actually before she came to Wild Prominence hanging out the hood of a car in Death Proof. So her stunt is she gets to wear some chains and jump off the side of a boat. And that's
which
the
is
end of Regina.
Still very much a stunt.
It is very much a stunt, and it is very shocking, and it is a key moment in the episode, but it is kind of odd that you cast Zoe Bell and she has more lines over a phone than on the freighter.
I don't know if that's true. When did this episode air, Neil? March 2008. Death Proof is 2007. Mm-hmm. So she's already Zoe Bell.
Oh,
and I only
damn.
Know that because I was reading the some contemporaneous recaps, and they mentioned that, like, knowing who Zoe Bell was. So she was
okay. Good. So people were expecting a stunt like me, and then got Cannonball.
Yeah, this is like a mildly underused Zoe Bell, but in the context of like how much is going on with Lost and, you know, how much room we have for a bunch of new characters. You know, she gets a good fun little moment there, I guess.
Noel Murray, I was reading Noel Murray's recap over on the EV Club, and he was like, at the time, he's like, listen, you don't cast a Fisher Stevens and a Zoe Bell unless we're going to get a Freighter episode. So we're definitely going to get a full Cabin Fever Freighter episode, blah, blah. You know, we will spend some time with the Freighter next week. Meet Kevin Johnson is a Michael episode. So I feel like I can say that. So, but mm-hmm. I don't think we get quite what Noel has in mind here. And like, we've talked about this before. I feel comfortable talking about this in the calm. Next week's episode is the last episode before the writer's strike break. And after the writer's strike break, they had to reconfigure their plans for the back half of the season or the back third of the season. And so it's possible that they were going to revisit Minkowski and Regina a bit more in depth, and they just didn't, because I can't remember if we talked about this in the comm, but have we talked about like who those episodes are supposed to be centered on in the comm? Probably not. We'll talk about it more in
the storm. No, I don't think we have.
I promise. I already have a note for in the storm, I promise. So we'll talk about it more in the storm, but I have to wonder if I would agree if it, you know, and I guess we can ask next time we get Damon on the line, but like Fisher Stevens and Zoe Bell and that's it. You know?
Yeah, I mean, I do remember from the original airing feeling like I wanted more Freighter. But, you know, it was also, I think there was also in the fandom, especially around the time where the writer's strike took off. I mean, it was just sort of like you wanted your favorite shows to survive. Yeah. So I'm sure we will revisit this point in a couple of weeks, but it was like when Lost came back after the long break, after the writer's strike, it was like, I'm just kind of glad they made it, you know, like, you know, it was one of those things where it's like, who even knew what shows were going to come back or when. So
I remember even when it was happening, forgiving some like lackluster turns and seasons, mm-hmm. because it like happened on a lot of shows. I remember specifically like, there's a whole season of Friday Night Lights you could just not watch.
Oh, season two.
Yeah.
Landry does a murder.
Which has some great stuff, but Landry does a murder. There's a, with like, Saracen has this weird affair that's very problematic and never comes back. I cut a lot of slack.
That's
for
the Carlota
writer's
strike,
right? Things.
Oh man. Every time Matt Saracen says Carlota, it's a crime against everyone. Well, that's so funny because I've been talking about that a lot this week because Supernatural just had its finale. And I don't know how much you pay attention to that, but it's been on the air 15 mm-hmm. seasons.
I watched at least nine of them. I'm convinced that I watched at least nine of them.
It was COVID delayed. The final two episodes were COVID delayed. And the finale, the series finale of a 15 season long show is utter dog food because they only had Jensen Ackles, Jared Padalecki, and Jim Beaver. Jim Beaver is great, but he can't, like, they only have the three of them, so it's a weird episode of television. And what a bummer forever for those Supernatural fans that's how their favorite show ended.
They went out on a bottle episode?
I mean, kind of.
Them and, them and Star Trek Enterprise, they could get together and have, like, a disserviced finale.
Yeah, and it's just
party.
So sad because it's, like, it wasn't because I saw... I think I mentioned this over on Little Gold Men, so apologies if you've already heard me tell this story, but like I saw a TikTok the other day of someone was like, oh, the Game of Thrones creators like sitting there having a drink, having made the worst series finale of all time, and then like in walks the Supernatural writers, like, hold my beer, and I was like, that's not fair. Thrones wasn't COVID mm-hmm. delayed, you know what I mean? Like
Thrones had infinite money and that's what they decided
Supernatural
to do.
Was about to lose Jared Padalecki to his Walker Texas Ranger reboot, which I just found out about last week, and Jensen Ackles is going to be on The Boys. And so, like, they didn't have their, you know, they had to, like, do it. So they just did the best they could, and it was dog food. But, like, and so, you know, through the years, we look back at the cost of COVID. Obviously, there's the real world cost, which is in a different category. And so I'm not comparing the two. But when we look at the cost of COVID on our, like, entertainment, Supernatural is going to be always top of my list for what happened there. I don't even care about that show necessarily, but, like, I care about the fans that are just like, 15 years for this. Anyway, sorry, I got off track. Speaking of Zoe Bell, can I talk about this Naomi Regina connection that I read about in a Doc Jensen recap?
Yes. Sure. Right before you do, though, I want to do the freighter crew check-in, just in case some people haven't tracked what we've done. So we have Miles, Frank, Daniel, Charlotte. They're on the island, but they're from the freighter. We have Kimi and Omar. They're on the freighter. Creepy Doctor on the freighter. Captain Galt, who we meet, on the freighter. Regina, we meet. She's not on the freighter anymore. She's definitely on the bottom of the ocean. We know confirmation that is Charles Widmore's boat. And Kevin Johnson, who is really just Michael. Those are who we know on the freighter.
And R.I.P. Brandon and Minkowski.
And Naomi.
And Naomi.
Oh, right, and Naomi.
Yeah. Wait, whose blood was on the wall? Was it someone else, or was it Brandon?
I don't think they mentioned who.
Okay,
it
let's assume was. For now it's Brandon.
Yeah, Brandon jumped off a boat, or no?
Well, they went on a boat, right?
There's somebody making a non-mechanical noise, so there might be also somebody locked up somewhere. Like, we kind of don't know if we've seen all the freighter.
This freighter
people.
Sucks. Fucking cockroaches everywhere. Bad times. All right. So this is from Doc Jensen's recap. Why did Regina kill herself? So, like, I've always assumed, having watched this episode many, many times, I've always assumed Regina killed herself because she, too, was suffering from the nosebleed sort of thing.
The jumps.
The cabin fever, as the captain describes it. Yeah.
Doc Jensen has a different theory, which is that because she was inconsolable over the death of her lover, the late lock-knifed Naomi. Remember the inscription on Naomi's bracelet? N, I'll always be with you, RG. Yep, I'm thinking RG is Regina. There's no evidence for this except Doc Jensen's speculation. I love that he was going there, though, because as far as I know, LGBT representation on Lost is very poor. And not that we should be, like, cheering for two dead lesbians necessarily, because that's nothing new in media, but I like that he was looking for this. I've never even considered it before, so, and I've never even seen it as, like, a common theory, so I just thought that I would plop it in there.
No, I like that a lot. It's like, congratulations, Lost. The good news is you have more representation. The bad news is you killed your gays.
Okay. Just,
and not, one didn't even really get lines.
Not great.
But
not
what
great. What was I going to say about that?
Props to Regina for being a female character on Lost who did not go out with some sort of trauma to the abdomen. I really appreciate it.
I also appreciate that. Can I hit you with another contemporaneous theory?
Go for it.
I don't know. The Harold Perrineau theory. So when Harold Perrineau shows up as Kevin Johnson and gives Saeed the old "don't out me" eyes, we all assume that's Michael Dawson, right?
Right.
But a fun theory at the time was that Harold Perrineau was playing Grown Up Walt. I just think that's fun.
Fun.
I guess
any way you could have ended that sentence was probably going to be fun for me. Sorry, go ahead.
I mean, I guess they have introduced some time slipping, but that would be full-on time travel. Like, I know that the actor, and this was a thing that people were monitoring at the time, the actor Malcolm David Kelly, who played Walt, grew up very quickly. So, like, everybody knew that. But yeah, this one might be too much of a stretch, actually, because that would involve some, like, actual physical time traveling, which I don't think we have yet.
It wouldn't be Walt from the timeline, even the freighter timeline,
mm-hmm.
it would be, yeah, it would be future Walt.
Future Walt. Well, I mean, we just add them to the list of different Walts that we've had. We've had Tall Soggy Walt, Electro Walt,
mm-hmm.
Future Walt. All right.
This Kevin Johnson seems to know his way around a computer and how to mess it up in that very specific way, like an Electro Walt would.
Yeah? Uh-huh, sure. Sure. can I bring up one other thing that happened, like, outside the world of Lost, but affected Lost?
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
So, Neil, in his recap of this episode, says Jin's dead, and that's very sad. I think it's fair to say we have some questions about that. First of all,
sure.
The date on his gravestone is the date of the crash. So that, you know, throws up some questions. We already know from Kate's testimony or Jack's testimony or whatever that, you know, their story, the Oceanic Six story, is that everyone died in the crash except for like 9 people. So like.
Mm-hmm. So it's safe to say that Jin is not the final member of the Oceanic Six.
I mean,
as far as the world knows, he died.
Right.
In the crash.
That's a question. I mean, like, he's got a tombstone out there. So, yeah, we can maybe safely say that. But that being said, we haven't seen Jin die yet. So we don't know. Mm-hmm. We already know the Oceanic Six is telling some lies. We don't know what has happened to Jin. We have not seen him die. And our listeners are savvy. They know if you don't see the body, you don't believe someone's dead until you see the body, right?
On the show that made a whole deal last season of telling us someone was going to die and then slowly building to a very powerful scene where he dies, I would say also keep
absolutely.
That
absolutely no. Right? I'm not saying he's not dead. I'm just saying, like, let's just say at the time there were also some questions. Okay.
Let's sure. just say Harold Perrineau could also be future Walt. We don't actually know yet.
But one thing that sort of added fuel to the fire speculation is that Daniel Day Kim was arrested for drunk driving a week before this episode aired.
We know how that
I
goes.
I mean, we've already addressed this at length with Michelle Rodriguez and Cynthia Walker.
This is another Lost Cast arrest corner.
Yeah, what happened to Annalisa and Libby? A lot of people, erroneously or not, associated with their arrest for drunk driving. So a bunch of people were worried that because Daniel Day Kim had been arrested for drunk driving, that meant that he too was going to be shot in the abdomen by Harold Perrineau. But
they brought him back to shoot another drunk driver. I love that theory.
So that's not how TV works, obviously. Like, if Daniel Day Kim was arrested 1 week before this episode aired, this episode was already in the can when he got arrested for drunk driving. But it made people worry about the future, especially since there's like a big break coming. So if you walk out of this episode and you're a Daniel Day Kim / Jin fan and you're unsure in this and it's 2008 and you're unsure whether or not he's actually dead or not dead or whatever, you may be a little bit more worried learning the news out of Oahu. That's all I want to say. So,
oh no, Michael's back, and there's been another arrest. I know how this ends.
So that's Jin Watch, official Jin Watch, 2008 edition.
Michael, why did you come back to the island? Where's Jin? Do do do. And he's just yelling Jin instead of Waltz, and it's just, you know, plays all the hits. I'm into it. So let's travel back to the island where I think, you know, most of our really powerful non-Hurley drama comes from, because Sun and Jin have sort of a reckoning with their place that leads to Juliet deciding that this is the week to stop being withholding and start being proactive for some reason randomly, which, you know, I get, she's invested a lot of time in saving babies, but she does that thing that is still a dick move, which is out somebody's affair that may have caused some pregnancy questions in the middle of the jungle. Who wants to defend this?
Not even me. Juliet Lover extraordinaire.
No, I... Well, and I think that, like, the place we... the place Juliet gets to, which is what she says in the apology scene with Sun, is, you know, that she considers Sun her patient. And obviously we know the history of Juliet and the emotional trauma that she's endured losing women, pregnant women on this island. So I guess, you know, to a certain extent, you understand like why she went down that path, but it really, it's like, it's a real dick
it's
move.
It's literally something she felt got somebody killed last episode. And mm-hmm. now here she is doing the exact same like thing.
You know, despite the ultimate effectiveness of her strategy, it was unnecessarily harsh and pretty bad. I mean, I think that the show also wants to continue. They're very obviously wanting to continue to have the audience not sure what to think about Juliet. Like, we're not supposed to, like, there's a lot of talk about how she is, you know, lied very easily about the Tempest station from the last episode. So
Kate's like, yeah, I don't trust any of them. What are you going to do? I'm going to get some water.
So despite the fact that Jack is like totally sold and seems to be just chilling out while all the action happens around him, I think we're still right to not be easy, like not feel completely easy about Juliet and her intentions and all the things that are happening.
I think it's working how it's supposed to, because I'm in that scene and it doesn't feel dumb like, oh, this wouldn't happen. It just feels like, man, Juliet, you made a bad personal choice. And that means drama's working. It just seems like not a good character choice for that person. But as Neil rightly pointed out, she's
been
through a lot.
I don't want to spoil anything, but I think this is the worst thing Juliet does. Am I wrong about that?
I mean, I think that'll be an interesting thing to track. I don't remember, you know, what happens later, if she does any other bad stuff. I think this is definitely the worst thing she's done yet.
Yeah, that's true.
To date. Because, I mean, what are some of the other, she killed somebody.
Yeah, but that someone sucked. So, you know.
Yeah, he sucked. She participated in the filming of Kate and Sawyer doing it in a cage.
Non-consensual revenge porn.
Not
she
great.
She tased Sawyer, but you know, I think honestly, Sawyer could use some tasing from time to time.
Sure. Yeah, I mean that's actually on the list of like cool things she did.
Honestly, I don't know. I'll think about it. And I will accept any and all reminders of awful things that she might have done that I've forgotten. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, I mean, even as a concerned doctor, like she has a legitimate concern for Sun's health. Still, I don't think you're allowed to do that. I don't think you're allowed to just out people's dirty laundry as a doctor. Isn't there some sort of like clause for that? I don't know. All the doctors and nurses who listen to us, can let us know.
Surely
is that
say
a,
it's a
is that
doctor.
A HIPAA violation?
Seems like it.
All right, who wrote Asian Stereotype Check-In? ? And explain yourself.
Asian Stereotype Check-In. That was me. All right, so I want to talk about Jin. This feels like a real journey for Jin in this episode. Mm-hmm. With the Bernard conversation, and then with the beautiful scene in the tent between Sun and Jin that I'm starting to cry about again as I think about it. And I just wanted to remind us all like where we started when we started beginning of season one with like a bunch of listeners, some of whom had never seen Lost before and were trusting us that the show would be something that they would be interested in based off of our coverage of Game of Thrones for years and stuff like that. And a bunch of people were like, hold up, what is with the Iraqi torture bullshit? What is with the like hardline Asian dude? What is with the bad single black dad? Like what is with all this stuff? Let's talk about Michael next week, and let's just like leave it with Saeed and Jin here for right now, which is this idea of something that I think a lot of us who were trying to encourage people to stick with it were like, we think the journey is worth this shaky place where it starts. And I think this payoff for Jin, I mean, we're already firmly in Saeed. He's very good. We're all on Saeed's team. Like, that's where we are in the show. Did they need to have him be a torturer? I don't think so. Like, I don't think you needed either of those stereotypes in season one. But what I will say is that the journey that Jin goes on to this episode is one of my favorite journeys on Lost. It's why you are weeping openly if you're me, in the tent scene, in the Bernard scene, and all of that, because of where Michael started. I mean, where Jin started. And so, like, I don't know. Like, I'm not saying stereotypes are good or creative or smart place to ever start your show at all. But I am saying that at the very least, Lost did not squander this place where they started in telling of Jin's story. Do you guys have any thoughts and feelings on that?
I think you're right. I would want to add this episode specific that it looked like it maybe ruffled some feathers that Bernard, a very white man, attempts to use his own version of what karma is while talking to Jin. Whereas it read as very sweet to me and more about who Bernard is and what he reaches to in kindness. So I guess if we are going to tick that off, I guess more blame the writers, but that did not bother me either, which is what I thought this bullet point was about, which is why I sounded so accusatory about it. But I like your journey point, because we should really signpost those things when Lost does something right. And yeah,
no, it wasn't about the karma thing. I mean, like, I will accept those criticisms, but I also think overall, like, I don't know, something someone younger and not white was saying recently on Twitter, and I'm sorry that I can't cite exactly who it was like, sometimes it's okay, and I'm just gonna put it in their voice, not mine. Sometimes it's okay for old white people to be old white people, you know what I mean? And like, be wrong and dumb about something, you know? It's true that slightly younger white people wrote those lines for that character to say, but like, I accept that Bernard might have a really dumb, faulty idea of what karma is. But what his intention is to talk about marriage and how it's hard in his journey through it, and help Jin in that way. And I think that's a beautiful moment for them. I don't know, Neil, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I like it. It's such a delightful moment for those two characters who, you know, have just think about where they've come from. You know, not understanding each other, being two guys who didn't really know what to do with their situation. You know, like just as Jin struggled when they first got to the island, Bernard, once he found Rose, was still sort of struggling with the whole thing. And I like that I like that there are friendships. You know, like, we don't get to see a lot of the mundaneness of living at the beach camp. But, you know, you really do feel, especially at this point in middle of season four, that there's some really good, just like, genuine chemistry that has developed within the cast. And this moment is what pays some of that off.
You know? Right. And you believe in this activity. You believe that, like, Bernard and Jin have been fishing before. Didn't Jin help Bernard with the pearl? Am I misremembering? Have we seen that episode? We have, right? Yeah. So they've done, you know, they've done like fishing bonding before and stuff like that, and being married guys bonding before and stuff like that. And so I think that Jin has these relationships with people despite the language barrier, being the guy who is like wanting to, you know, he's brilliantly followed Sun's lead. He wants to make himself helpful to the community. He was like the last one to help Bernard with his misguided SOS rock thing, which wasn't necessarily misguided, but like, the execution was not great, let's just say. But but you know, Jin was the last person to stick with that project and help him. Jin helps Hurley with the van, you know what I mean? It's just like, Jin is trying to be part of this community in a way that Sawyer has to be tricked into. Jin is like willingly trying to be part of this community. And that's another beautiful thing to observe versus season one, when he's like, it's us and it's them, you know, and he's learned a lot since then, which is really, yeah, it's beautiful.
I love Jin. I'm so sad that he died in the flash forward.
Yeah. He was killed by adult Walt, who has come from the future.
To shoot him in the abdomen.
Because in another timeline, Daniel Day Kim just, you know, drove down the wrong Hawaiian road.
It's a good thing Sun and Jin had that picnic inside their tent and not on a beach somewhere, because Jin would already be dead.
And then I guess our last fact before we get to the corners, this is the only episode where Nikki appears without Paolo, because it's a dubbed version of Exposé that Sun's watching in the future. Exposé lives on and gets sold to other international properties.
Right, especially because Nikki and Paolo, they were on the plane, so they would have been famously dead. Exposé probably had a good streaming deal.
Do you think it's if I were Jin, I'd be like, hey, I know that girl, right? Like, it's Nikki and Paula. I know her. So,
I wonder if it's hard to watch for the Oceanic Six survivors. Is it tough to watch your close friend, Nikki,
who was with you through all your season one adventures?
All right, that's gonna lead us to our corners. Neil, our Giacchino corner cup overfloweth this week.
It really does, and I don't think any of these are great puns, but they are all good tracks. There are three tracks from the season four soundtrack in this episode. The first is Maternity Hell, the second one is Karma Ginitiative, which at least he tried, but still not great. And the last one, the one that crushes your soul at the end.
Initiative. So sweaty. Oh my God. Okay, sorry.
Yeah, Giacchino also was bothered by the writer's strike, apparently. And then the last one, the one that really gets you, is just simply titled Gian. So, and that, there's a lot of, I believe in that one, there's a lot of the Sun and Jin previous theme, and it'll just kill you.
Honestly, I'd be on board with Giacchino if he said Karma Initiative or Dharma Initiative, but the double effort.
Well, no, but Jin's being explained Karma by Bernard and the Karma Initiative.
I know why it's called Karma Initiative. I just... Oh my God.
It's not just a pun. It actually applies to the show. I think those are the more difficult ones.
Karma Genition.
That describes the plot. Okay. Our jungle mystery moment comes from Captain Galt, who we will get to a little bit more in another corner. But he notices that there are 324 dead bodies that have been placed this apparently fake Oceanic A-15 crash. Where does somebody get that many dead bodies? Ben already has like a pit full of them, but like that seemed to be all of them. So,
I feel like he's on the right track. If the best answer he's come up with is, I need to ask Ben Linus, because if there's any character on Lost who I believe could find 324 bodies in a pinch, it's Ben. He's the only one. He's got a skill set that is. Let's call him a Renaissance man of weird shit.
The Boone Carlyle Memorial Falling Down Award, as we've established, goes to Vertical Distance. So this week goes to Regina, who falls at the bottom of the ocean because of the chains. Rest in peace, Regina. We hardly knew you.
R.I.P. Regina.
Good night, sweet girlfriend of Naomi.
Good night, sweet Naomi's girlfriend. The Oceanic Six Detective Corner gets expanded this week. We got Kate, we got Jack, we got Hurley, we got Saeed, and now we can confirm Sun is the fifth of the Oceanic Six. We know that Aaron is off the island. We know that Ben is off the island. They have not been called the Oceanic Six. So, mystery person still
Oceanic
out there.
Oceanic 5 of 6.
Oceanic 5 of 6. We're getting there. Slowly.
Can I, really quickly, I know we're in corner territory, but can one of you recap what Captain Gold's story is about the plane crash in the ocean and the black box and all of that?
He has the black box from Oceanic 815, and it is fake. And he says that somebody has faked this landing, and he's been sent by Charles Widmore, and he wants to ask questions of Ben, but he also feels like the the cabin fever, as he calls it, is a result of being off the island. So primary goal, Ben, also that plane is fake.
And he said Ben faked the crash?
He does not know who faked the crash, but he says Ben faked the crash.
And then what do you guys make of other people saying, like, don't trust the captain? Don't listen to the captain.
You mean probably Michael writing on our note, don't trust the captain?
Mm-hmm.
I think that if you're going to have two characters given a story, but you know you can't give it to Locke because Locke will instantly believe it and base his future actions off of it. You can't really give it to Jack because Jack's going to question your motivations in telling you selfishly. I think giving it to Desmond and Saeed is kind of the safest information. If you're going to have two people who are actually going to process things and who know all the players, you have Saeed who, got to torture Ben a little bit and knows the extent of his darkness. And then you have Desmond, who knows Charles Widmore. So I feel like on Team Losties, in this mysterious freighter, I feel like we got some good players on the board.
Sure. Okay. So probably Michael writes, don't trust the captain, right? Mm-hmm. There's also this exchange where Saeed says, I still want to talk to the captain. And Lapita says, no, you don't. And
yes.
Frank is a character who so far we feel like we trust, right? There's nothing Frank has done.
He's been helpful.
Very helpful.
Yeah.
So if he says don't trust the captain, like, Michael is dubious. He likes to shoot women in the stomach. So I don't know, like, what Michael is up to or why he's here. But if Frank doesn't trust the captain, that makes me not want to trust the captain. But also, we met the captain and he seemed very reasonable and fine. So I don't know what to think here.
I think, honestly, that's what threw me off. That's what throws me off every time about the captain is, like, they do build him up to be, like, sort of, you know, everybody on the ship is sort of weary of the captain, or, you know, he's maybe this intimidating figure or something. You know, there's something about him. I think we should be suspicious that he shows up with so much exposition. Super trust. He's got a lot. He sells them
a
lot.
If you're ever being held captive in a situation where you have information that your captors don't, be on the lookout for the good cop, bad cop. It is the number one thing they're going to try to pull on you. Mm-hmm. And I think we just got a peek at the good cop,
I think that there is something at play of, like Dave said, which characters it is, because I feel better knowing that it's Saeed that he's spitting this exposition at, and Desmond, because they're good at figuring out
very
the plot
good
of this show they're that they're
very
on. so I think it might just be that Saeed is present in the room. So you're like, oh, well, if this captain guy sucks, he'll figure it out.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not worried about
if he's lying, Saeed will sort of quirk his head to one side and smile at him.
He doesn't. I mean,
none of that is true.
We're four seasons into this thing. He doesn't even need to torture
he'd be
people
like,
anymore. He just has questions.
Like, very entertaining. But I don't believe you. With a big, beautiful smile on his face. Should we talk about Captain Handsome Accent, which is what I've decided to call him?
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about Captain
Handsome
Accent.
We are an accent corner, fully an accent corner territory. Captain Handsome Accent that's a spin on, if you've listened to me podcast since the must have been The Last Jedi. No, maybe Rogue One. Anyway, there was a guy that I called Captain Handsome Mustache from an earlier Star Wars movie because I could never remember his name, but he was very handsome and had a mustache. So Captain Handsome Accent is played by an actor named Grant Bowler. Accent Corner is a two-parter this week. Number one, what accent do you think he's trying to do? And number two, do you think it's authentically his accent? Starting with Neil Miller.
Well, I think it's supposed to be Australian. And I think I'm going to go out on a limb and say he is Australian, and that I apologize in advance to the entire country of Australia if this is wrong.
And Dave?
I think he's trying to do like some sort of off British, and I'm going to say he's Australian.
All right, so he is, Grant Bowler is Australian.
Yes.
I don't know what Captain Galt's, where he's supposed to be from.
The problem is Captain Galt does not introduce himself like Kimi, which is name and where you're from.
But
would have been very helpful here.
But he, yeah.
So Lostopedia definitely describes him as the Australian captain of the freighter.
During casting, this is according to Lostopedia, during casting, the character of Galt was known as Houston, 50s, male, Caucasian, weathered face, salt and pepper hair, a man who immediately commands great authority, but someone you don't want to cross. He has a job to do and he doesn't allow anything to get in his way, even the death of his employees. So... I'm not sure that Galt is like really giving off that vibe for me in this episode, I have to say.
Right. I don't think they nailed it based on that description. Yeah. I mean, Grant Bowler, he's fine here. He has a lot to tell us. We'll see more of him in the future, but that is not what we got. We got a very handsome three-person tense conversation on the deck of the ship. So is it better? I think so, probably.
I mean, if we're just talking about evil face, you can't have Kevin Durand around and try to tell me that Captain Galt has a better evil face, because he just doesn't.
You needed a more gruff guy who who's not going to be intimidated by like a Kimi type, because you know Kimi walks around with his chest puffed out. So I don't know if I buy this guy as like keeping Kimi in line. So you know, I have more questions, to say the least.
Our Henry Gale Memorial, obviously a lie award, is obviously a lie in a rewatch, but Dr. Bay, let's pause a moment. Hey, Dr. Bay.
Who lit up our live watch. Everybody was really into Dr. Bay.
Everyone was real into Dr. Bay. It says about Jin, I'm sure he'll be here soon, not knowing that Jin is dead.
But Dr. I think Bay, that's the assumption, right? Is that he's not Sun's usual doctor?
Yeah, he's the replacement, and I guess has not been watching news coverage of the Oceanic Six.
Sure.
Or he has, and he's trying to calm a flustered woman.
You already gave her the medication, right? All right, yeah, he'll probably be here soon.
Probably not the best moment to have a grounded conversation with someone about the fact that she's calling out to her dead husband.
He did. Yeah, I mean it's along with the it's a cheat of the same vein of Jack saying get my father down here and see what he has to say.
Get my father,
you know what I mean?
Here.
It's like we're drugged out in a hospital. We might say anything. We're wacky, you know, sort of thing. So it's a real cheat, but you know.
It is time, I guess, for a very special Jungle of Kistery. It is usually where we ask our listeners who should be kissing on this island filled with very attractive people, and I guess this freighter filled with very attractive people. How did we do last week for the other woman?
So the other woman, we now have a new metric, I think, which is that it, much like Desmond and Penny, if a certain couple is in Kistery, they're gonna win it by a mile. Everyone else, hang up your lips. You got no chance. Because coming in at the bottom is Goodwin and Juliet, the ostensible like romantic pairing of the episode, with 13.
The people who actually kissed.
I mean, it's extramarital. We understand, but 13.2% of the percent of the vote goes for Goodwin and Juliet. Ben and Locke, who have another like fun imprisonment close conversation, they only get 14%. Dan and the computer. Which he spent a lot of blood, sweat, and tears on that computer, 20% of the vote, but just like racing away with the whole thing. Once again, it's the Dharma roommates, Hurley and Sawyer, playing a good old game. Oh no, they played horseshoes this week, right? Yeah.
We haven't even talked
about what happened in the Dharma barracks, really. but yeah, a good game of horseshoes for good old Hurley and Sawyer. That was the other one. That's why we didn't talk about it. Okay. Sorry, I got confused. This week, Jian, I'm canceling Kistery. We're not doing it. Because it's Sun and Jin, and that's
Bernard
it.
Bernard had a shot. No. Bernard had a shot.
Not even Captain Handsome Accent is going to touch Sun and Jin in Jian. Are you kidding me? So I know we did something fun for Desmond and Penny in The Constant, and it was thematic, but for this one, much like Jin at the end of this episode, Kistery is dead. And we're not doing it this week.
The kissery is just tears and your face. Those two things kissed.
Kistery died the day the Flight 815 crashed, much like Jin. But who's to say if both of them will be back next week? We'll find out.
We got some book clubs this week as well.
We're going to circle back to Captain Handsome Accent for this one because we got a little bit of Ayn Rand, our favorite, is back in Atlas Shrugged. The Captain Handsome Accent's real name is Galt, right? So there's John Galt is a character in Atlas Shrugged. He's a mystery man who has invented a powerful new source of energy and has vanished off the face of the earth. Turns out he and some other quote-unquote captains of industry have formed a secret society in Colorado. There's also another reference for Galt. Hold on, let me find it. Which is that... Captain Galt is also a fictional sea captain created by English writer William Hope Hodgson, a captain for hire. Galt is a morally ambiguous and mysterious character. A collection of his stories can be found in the book Captain Galt Being the Exceedingly Private Log of a Sea Captain, published in 1917. So
I love colon names that just describe what it is, but also one that describes something that's secret is like really hilarious.
A diary of a scandal.
Galt's the book, the secret diary that you shouldn't read.
Exceedingly private. All right.
Exceedingly private.
All right. Last book corner entry is What Regina Is Reading Upside Down. It is called The Survivors of the Chancellor, and it's by Jules Verne. It is an 1875 novel of psychological suspense about the castaways of a grounded ship who start killing themselves from madness and despair. Interestingly enough, the books that Verne published before and after Survivors of the Chancellor have some powerful lost resonances. Mysterious Island is, of course, considered an essential text. But then there's Michael Strogoff, about a spy on a mission named Michael, his lady love, a woman who shares the name of Saeed's Iraqi sweetheart, Nadia. That write-up came courtesy to you of Doc Jensen. So that is what Regina is reading upside down. Maybe giving her some ideas of what to do with some chains.
Mm-hmm.
Yikes.
But upside down, so who even knows what she absorbed. Got.
Speaking of Regina, she gets a very special spot for our Charlie Pace Memorial Final Words Award because she is the first one who will be rewarded for silence as she jumps off the
edge. Hey, Neil, can you give us a dramatic reading of Regina's final words?
It's just dot, dot, dot.
Yep. Nice. The Carl's Coming Right Now Actbreak Award we did, and the official podcast check-in didn't happen this week because it was cast interviews about what it was like having Michael back in preparation for next week's episode, which will actually tell us if that's Michael or adult while figure out even more in the storm right after this.
Now is the time of the podcast where we would like to thank our Patreon subscribers at the $10 level or above. Thank you all so much. We know these are tough times, so we really appreciate your support. I would like to thank, starting with Melissa Asgler, Robert Dufour, Rafa Mache. I might have butchered that. Please let us know. Denise Ewan, Brandon Turner, Joy Novak, Diana Byrne, Jenna Clark, Rex Lorenzo, James Stout, Catherine Huey, Time Traveler Creative, Rosemary, Christina Rudy, TLS, Benjamin, Kreish Bomber, Shauna Evans, Sandra, Ben Miller, and Casey Ogle. So pretty. Thank you guys so much.
And I would like to add to our boundless thanks. Thanks for Jennifer Holloway, SM, Eric Stratton, Rona, Raquel Azvedo McKenney, Jessica Caposi, Lisa Beauregard, Sydney, Aaron, Kate Whitney, Miranda Lane, Abby Bateman Bateman, Victoria Yoder, Carolyn, Rajiv Dasani, Lori Bonar, Shannon Black, Isabel Hazel Roundtree Jones, Tiffany Flowers, and Charlotte Daly. Thank you very much.
And I would like to thank the following lovely human beings, including Sean Ambrolt, Dan Allen, Susan Flanagan, Christina Barocius, Rachel Fisher Bramble, Monty Cross, Susan Kustush, Danielle Shepherd, Spencer Howard, Susan P., Amy Meek, lovely Miss Jetta, Nick Mendoza, Elizabeth Stelner, Ainsley Clark, Shauna Drake Kelleher, Avindel, alright, I think I nailed that one, Rebecca, Nicole Capus, and Natalie Olivas. Thank you all very much for being members of the Small Council.
And we're back for the storm. Locke's not here, so we don't have to do an antagonist check-in. But, hey, we're here on an episode where we're, like, at least... we're almost an hour and a half into it, and we're just in the storm. So, here's to the keeping it loose guy. We're here keeping it loose. Joanna, I have a series of questions for you, but one that's really the most important. We had an email saying that Incel Ben was the second creepiest. Who's the first creepiest character on Lost?
Oh, yeah, thank you. Let me find that email again.
Or wait, was it that was the worst thing Ben did?
Oh, no, he said or... creepy.
No, it was the creepiest.
No, creepy Incel Ben is the second worst thing in Lost after the cork.
Oh. Well, you know, people have strong feelings about the cork.
Yes.
We'll have
Still
to maybe do a whole special episode about the island's
what
cork.
The cork did.
Mm-hmm. What the
through the looking cork.
Explain. Get me Daniel over here and explain to me how this rock shaped like a wine cork is holding back all the good in the world.
All the best cowboys have cork issues. Yeah.
The cork and the wet ghosts and all the answers that we have to come up with in this rewatch podcast, because the show doesn't come up with them, which, you know, has been fun. I am kind of sad now that I know it exists that Michael's not time travel Waltz.
Cork of science, cork of faith.
Yeah, but you know, give Walt a I'm my own grandpa like syndrome through
no,
like some weird
but
time
I want,
travel
like
shit,
in so. The storm I want to reopen this question because like no obviously he's not playing time travel Walt, but like this is a question we've had in the storm before, which is like they could have done time travel Walt. They really could have, and it would have been maybe fun for to have Harold Perrineau play him. That could have been a fun use of Harold Perrineau, you know. So I think that's a great idea, and I'm sorry they didn't do it.
I think it ends up being time travel Walt ends up being more interesting just because of the way the inconsistencies of needing Harold Perrineau back now sort of shunts his off island story into like hardcore depressing, and then he's back to the island. But I guess that's a lot
we'll
more
talk about that.
For
yeah,
next week.
Did I already say quirk of science, quirk of faith? What about corker and a cork lamp? All right.
Live together, cork alone.
Cork avion. The cork from Tallahassee. Yes? What's next?
What's next? All right. Don't trust the captain? Yeah, that's fine. We don't need the captain that much. We have it discussed a little bit, I don't know if it's amongst ourselves or in previous storms, about how the captain might actually I think it was in the storm thread of the live watch, how the captain might have been a victim of the writer's strike being abbreviated, because I do like the idea that watchers of the time floated, which is like there's got to be a whole Freighter episode. I wouldn't have minded a Freighter episode.
Yeah, I mean, we get so in Meet Kevin Johnson, we have Michael meets Naomi. He meets Miles and maybe Dan. Do you remember, Neil? You watched it more recently than I did in Meet Kevin Johnson.
And Kimi. I mean, yeah, I think
and he meets Kimi too. And I think he meets the captain. But I don't think he meets Minkowski. I could be wrong. And I don't think he necessarily meets Regina. So it's not the full Freighter deep dive that one might want, because we have to spend all that time like getting Michael on the boat in the first place, you know? So
Yeah, I mean, I feel like if there was something beyond what we get in Meet Kevin Johnson that they wanted, it probably would have been, and I think we've talked about this, like flashbacks or flash somethings for the members of the freighter crew who are on the island.
We know that for certain. It was
Charlotte, Daniel,
Miles. That they were going to get their own flashback episodes, and I imagine in those flashback episodes we might have gotten more freighter stuff, and it might have made more sense for
sure. Maybe if they had enough time, maybe even an episode where Frank is hanging out with the pilot from Flight 15. Greg Grunberg comes back.
Yeah. No, I mean, it makes sense that like a Frank, because Frank's the one who's like, don't trust the captain. So you could put some captain in some Frank and do that sort of thing. And Regina and Naomi's true love could be seen through the eyes of Charlotte's or something like that. Like, who knows, really?
Oh no, Mikowski is in that episode. I'm sorry, I'm looking through right now. Mikowski is in this week.
Yeah, a fair amount of it takes place on the
freighter. So all the people I already listed, which is Frank, Miles, and Naomi, Kimi and Omar, Mikowski. I don't see Regina's name here in next week's episode, but like, so yeah, so it's fairly freightery. No Regina, as far as I can tell. So,
next week's the end of that period of shooting.
Right.
So they shot up through Kevin Johnson and then had to
come back. I really do think this whole like Galt, can you trust him, was a victim of that, because he dies in episode 11 like pretty unceremoniously. Like, I think this is Galt's biggest episode. I think that's true, and he like scraps with Kimi a bit, but like so whatever they had planned, whatever, for Frank to be like, no, you don't want to be the captain, that never pays off, I think. So
Well, and I think there's just something about the way that they sort of switch gears and make Kimi the sort of central villain of the season, you know, like where, and I guess maybe it had something to do. I would love to pose this question to Damon and Carlton, which is like, did it have something to do with sort of the flat-ish performance that we get from this dude who's playing Galt, where when they finally came back, it was like, yeah, actually we do need to maybe just use Kimi as like the main antagonist.
I think he's just giving me, I'm like intrigued by him. I just think he's giving me something completely different than like the wrong. I will co-sign wrong performance if that's what they were
right.
Going
well, I mean, I guess what I was expecting was like somebody really intense and like intimidating. Yeah. And this dude's kind of boring.
I don't think he's boring. That's what I'll say. But not, does not fit the bill, I will agree. So maybe it's just this actor isn't working. Let's bump up Kevin Durant. Yeah. I don't know. And if Captain Galt is fixated on Ben Linus, you can still see an outcome where he orders the death of Alex or something like that. You know what I mean? But like, what?
Well, even just to make him a bigger obstacle for Kimi to then overthrow. Like, I don't think that was necessarily riffing, because I think they, you know, cast the right actors in the roles they wanted them to. But I think they did, we're going to amp up the captain. So when, you know, Kimi finally outs him because of his, you know, cabin fever or whatever, it's in the episode Cabin Fever. When Kimi finally shoots him, then it would have been like, oh, now we're off the rails. But I think he was supposed to be like this weird Colonel Kurtz-ish, I'm at the center of this madness, but I'm strangely like the calm center of it. It's like, that's sort of like what the casting description reads of. And I could see where this performance is sort of like hinting at that, but it doesn't work for me.
Yeah.
For any of us. I can speak for all of us.
But what was I going to say? The Galt stuff, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, maybe that's all I had to say about that. It is interesting to wonder what might have paid off there, especially with Lapidus's concerns, you know.
So we have this fun storm fact that this is the only episode of the series that features more than one kind of flash. Other episodes of the series feature either flashbacks, multi-centered flashbacks, flash-forwards, multi-centered flash-forwards, flash-sideways, or multi-centered flash-sideways. Thank you, whoever copied all of that.
Yeah, that was me. I think this is a very fascinating one to me, and I almost put it in the column, but I didn't Because maybe that is a kind of a spoiler that they don't ever come back to this using two types of Flash in one episode. Because it's like, yeah, they try it here, but they never actually come back to that.
I think they must have felt it. Like, I could see this episode where they're like breaking it up and they're like, we're gonna do this thing. You know, you're gonna see Jin rushing and then whatever. And then you see the episode and you're like, the only thing I don't like about it really is Jin rushing. And like, that might have been the seed of like this cool thing we could do with time. But then when they saw the performances, they're just like, yeah, we don't need it. These guys can act us to where they need to be, hopefully. Well, yeah. Well, I mean, I think once we get to Flash Sideways, everything reorients in a cool way. Because like the first season is like the Flashes are there to expose about character, and the Flash Sideways, you're just like, what am I even seeing? But you're seeing like a pure lost version of them, just not on the island. Super fun. It's going to be interesting as Storm and Calm start bridging together in season 6. But then again, we'll also be at the temple, so maybe not that interesting. I should set the bar very low.
And I do think, like, the thing that I was alluding to in the Calm is, which hopefully people picked up on, is like, I do think some of the Flash Sideways, I like some of the Flash Sideways, but not all of the Flash Sideways. And so I think, you know, that is lost, not always at its finest. And we'll get there. But I think sometimes it's just doing the gimmick to do the gimmick. And we'll talk about that on a case-by-case basis. But I think that Gion gets sort of lumped into, like I said, some of Lost's shakier experiments with that kind of stuff. That makes sense.
Yes. I think in reality, it's a unique episode in that they only tried this once and it actually does work.
Emotionally, it works. Yep.
Emotionally, they crushed it.
Speaking of things they keep trying out that may or may not be working, the ambiguity of the Oceanic Six is probably working somewhat for Calmies who haven't watched before, but as people who have watched before, it's getting harder and harder every week to not be like, what do you matter already? Well,
I think Lindelof and Q said that they intentionally wanted it to still, they went on record to say they intentionally wanted it to still be ambiguous after this episode. So they were still keeping that Aaron card as a question mark, which.
Yeah, and they hold it until the finale.
Is that when the press conference
right?
is?
Because we don't get the press, at least as far as my memory serves, which could be terrible. But yeah, I think it's the opening scene of There's No Place Like Home, part one, which is where we first sort of see
the final Oceanic Six. Yeah, flashback episode, yeah.
Yeah, we got a lot of Ben and Locke stuff to do in these first couple episodes of the back half.
But I feel like here they're like, if you're watching this for the first time, do you think that maybe Michael could be one of them now?
Oh,
like he went off the island, he came back to the island, and then he's like the sixth one. I guess why keep it this long, you know, if it's not going to be weirdly complicated.
The reason why I felt like it was okay to say that thing in the calm that I did about Jin is like, we do watch Jin quote unquote die, even though he's not dead. But like that is coming. So like they're playing with a lot of, you know, so you might come out of this episode and you're like, he can't really be dead. Bullshit. He's dead. You know, all this sort of stuff like that. And then you see the freighter blow up and you're like, oh, I guess he is dead. But then hopefully our clever commies will be like, but we don't, that Jin quote unquote dying on the freighter is such bullshit. And I feel like I knew it at the time, but I don't trust past me. But you don't get one more shot of his face before it blows up. And that's very suspect. So, you know, we're gonna have to pretend Jin's dead for like four episodes, I think.
I actually feel like the Jin's fake out with the freighter is one of the scenes that sort of taught me to look out for stuff like that. Because this, I mean, you know, I think Lost, they've done a couple of fake outs, right? But nothing quite at the level of Jin, and it happens in that finale. So it's like,
there's so, you know, much going on.
Right. You end the season with like, oh shit, like Jin's dead.
You're like, Jin's dead, but Desmond and Penny are together. I don't know how to feel. I feel so many feelings. Yeah. Sawyer jumped out of a helicopter. The island moved. We'll get there. And we're still, just for you guys who are listening, we're still discussing how we're going to watch and record for the final, because the finale is a three-parter, so we were still discussing whether or not we're going to watch that all as a lump or not, but a lot happens. But ostensibly, Jin dies. So, and Daniel Day Kim got arrested for drunk driving. So, you know.
Well, and I think what's important is that Sun is pretty sure that Jin's dead at that point, which it becomes an important piece.
Oh my god! And later,
she is already a villain, and nobody knows.
Yunjin Kim, who's like so good in this episode. I rewatched the Jin death after we watched Jeon for some reason. I did that to myself. And her like screaming and trying to like hurl her body out of the helicopter to get to Jin is, ooh, it's a lot. I think that Yoo-jin Kim should have gotten an Emmy nomination, if not a win, at least for Lost.
Oh, like, 100%.
I would like Terry O'Quinn and Michael Emerson are incredible, but I think Daniel Day Kim and Yoo-jin Kim are just like, oh, they're very, very good. So, yes.
We have a Storm email to head out.
Yeah, this is a fun question, especially for you two who have not rewatched season 5 recently, I think. I think I have an answer to this, but I'm curious what you guys think before I give my answer. This is from Jennifer, who is writing in about the comment we made from the other woman about Juliet, the comment of "you look just like her," and in the Storm last week I said that doesn't pay off, and she says, wait, what? I always assumed Harper was talking about Juliet, but 1970s Juliet. 70s Dharma Juliet crossed path with young Ben many time, especially when she was saving his life. That's not to say that Harper knows Juliet time travel, but surely there's a photo of 70s Dharma, and Ben showed Harper a photo pointing to Juliet saying, she saved my life, please explain because I'm confused. I think I do have an answer to this, but also I do want to relish the imaginary scene of Ben Linus sitting down with Harper and being like, that's her. The one I told you about with a photo.
That's my constant.
this blonde lady is my constant. Anyway, what do you guys think?
I mean, that makes more sense than some of the answers we were coming up with, I'll be honest. I like that. I mean, it's true. I have not watched the only bit of season 5 I've rewatched was the when we watched LaFleur like a year ago this week when we were in Denver. yeah, I guess that works.
Why did we watch LaFleur? Just because I wanted to?
Yeah, just because.
What a Joanna move.
I don't remember what the purpose of it was, but conversation.
Maybe that's where we were in my rewatch with Diana. So maybe since Diana was
maybe.
That makes sense.
That was, and you know, that's a great episode. I had totally forgotten that Ben meets 1970s Juliet. So yeah, sure. That makes sense to me.
Dave?
I feel like the murky cursed waters of the temple would have erased that
Dave
knowledge.
Dave gets points to
head.
Dave. So Juliet is a question mark, but a bigger question mark is like, why doesn't Ben remember Saeed shooting him. And so what happens is, right, young Ben gets shot by Saeed because he's Saeed's doing the whole like, what if we kill baby Hitler? None of this happens. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so Saeed shoots baby Ben, and Kate and Juliet, Kate and Sawyer bring Ben to the others to try to save him. And Richard takes him, and Richard says, if he takes Ben, Ben will not remember any of this. He will lose his innocence, and he will always be one of us. So in theory, they dropped him into the temple waters, just like they do Saeed later. Results may vary with the temple waters.
So they created Hitler.
Yeah, but with Ben, it's conveniently help the plot loophole of why doesn't Ben remember having met all these people before. It's because the temple waters erase that portion of his memory. I think that applies more broadly to Juliet as well. Otherwise, I feel like Ben would be saying far weirder things around her than he already does.
You're mine. You've always been mine. You'll be mine in the past, future.
I think that's the answer. But if anyone listening disagrees, let me know. Or if our emailer disagrees, let me know. But yeah, I think Ben got a convenient case of amnesia. Of selective oceanic related amnesia. So there you go. Is that it?
Oh, okay. Wet. Got it. Got it. Yeah. Again, things that are wet on Lost to go off of last week's wet ghosts. They react differently than things.
Wet temple water, Ben.
Wet temple water, Ben. Just like wet murky water. It's all gonna go downhill.
Oh my gosh! And then just a waste of some great guest stars. Anyway, we'll get to the temple.
The real enemy of the island of mystery is water. I feel like it's encroaching on all sides. It's constantly, you know. Anyway, not important. At least not this week.
Can I talk a little bit more about Hurley saying good to Sun when she's like, no one else is here, and like, whom hates whomst in all of this?
Sure.
Right?
Yes.
Like, Hurley's mad because he has to keep secrets, and he's frustrated about that, right? And
right.
Sun is mad. I mean, like, what's weird is that it seems like Sun's mad at Kate. Like, I want Sun to be a villain. And then they swerve away from that. It seems like she's going to be. She allies with Charles Widmore. She, like, has good reason to, not good reason, but to blame the people, other people in the helicopter, especially Kate, for the fact that Jin doesn't make it onto the helicopter, right? Because Sun's like, I have to go get Jin, and Kate's like, I'll go get him, and comes back without Jin. And Sun's like, F you! You had one job, Kate, and you came back empty-handed. So, like, you assume that Sun hates Kate, but then, like, they have an episode where Sun's like, I don't hate you, Kate. Not at all. That's not at all what I've been feeling. And I'm like, I kind of wish Sun had gone supervillain on us. I think that would have been a really fun thing for Yunjin Kim to play. So instead, it just gets Sun's plotline actually gets like pretty murky from here. Except for like her one quest in life, which is to be reunited with Jin. But I don't know. I don't know. Do you guys have any thoughts about the Interoceanic Six drama?
Why Jin doesn't, why Sun doesn't like any of them?
No, like, why doesn't she dislike them more? Or like, what, you know, like, what's, I mean, if I were Sun, the main Oceanic Six person I would want to see is Hurley, for sure. But like,
always,
you know, why doesn't Hurley want, say, Saeed there? Or like, why doesn't, you know, like, I don't know. Do you guys have any larger?
Yeah. Well, I mean, and I think we've got a well-established pattern of why someone wouldn't want to hang out with Jack.
Absolutely. No matter where he is on the self-destructive spectrum. Beard or no beard.
Well, and then also Kate wasn't part of her plea deal. She can't leave the country.
Yeah, Kate, I give a pass to.
So she can't. She definitely can't show up in Seoul, which I think is where we could safely assume this last scene. You know, Jeremy Bentham is out there doing his thing, but he's not relevant because he's not one of the Oceanic Six.
It's really just Jack and Saeed at this point.
It's just Jack and Saeed. And I think Saeed, what we learn ultimately about Saeed is that he very immediately, like, starts a whole new life and ends up with, like, three whole new lives in his Oceanic Six, post-Oceanic Six existence. You know, like, right at the press conference, he gets back with Nadia, and then, like, Nadia dies, and then he's, like, working for Ben, and, like, Saeed's life is very James Bond complicated. He does not have time to be visiting babies.
I guess it depends on the timeline of when this happens. Sun is, what, how many months pregnant on the island? Seven, right?
She's about to enter her third trimester,
right? Yeah, I think
right?
She's, like, 7 months pregnant or something like that. Maybe I made that up, but
or she's 3 weeks away from being in her third trimester, whatever that means.
But so then, you know, in theory, Gion is born like 3 months later or whatever. I know that Saeed and Nadia go to Hurley's birthday party that his parents throw for him. They're at like the Hawaiian themed birthday party that his parents throw for him. So Saeed is at least being sociable in that regard. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I just feel like.
Well, I think Hurley's the glue.
Absolutely.
Like, Hurley is the one character that all, you know, and this obviously takes us down the path toward Hurley being the dude. And so, I don't think it's particularly surprising. thing. I mean, if you were one of the other, like if you were Saeed or Jack and you were with Sun to witness the death of Jin on that freighter and you were part of the group who was like, no, we got to go. Maybe they would be tentative to maybe, you know, not that they're like mad at Sun, but maybe they would be like nervous about like, maybe we shouldn't mess with Sun for a while. Let's let her process.
She's been through some stuff.
The Jin explosion, you know,
the Karmage initiative, the Jin, right. The Jincineration. Yeah, I mean,
it's like, we all saw that and it's terrible.
I'm only laughing because it's not real. I mean, RIP Michael for real, but yeah. Aww. I know. We're going to talk about all of
I mean,
that.
The greater, ultimately, the greater question, which we will revisit, is how does Jin move with the island if he's,
I guess,
if
we
he's been blasted off the freighter?
We have to assume the blast radius got him within. Like,
yeah, on the barrier. Correct vector to not cause cabin fever, he was blown.
Because it's like he's about as far away from the island as the helicopter, and the helicopter doesn't move. So,
I did actually have something related to that I think I can read in the storm. Hold on, let me find it. In Alex's email, Alex is the one who sent us the constant tattoos. He says, when Micah was leaving, it was pre-hatch explosion, and due to the properties of it, I'm a firm believer that the moment the hatch went boom, the bearings to get off the island changed, hence where we are today. So that would be why Micah was given one bearing, and Dan is giving Lapidus a different bearing, because the hatch blew up. And I was like, I don't hate that.
Yeah.
I'm down with that.
And maybe the island, you know, shifted just a little bit.
Wiggled a little bit. do you know what? Do you know who's definitely gonna? I feel like is definitely gonna win the finale history, and it's not Desmond and Penny.
Wow, this is a bold prediction.
I'm
right
gonna
here.
Start my campaign.
Whatever
now.
It is,
it's Sawyer and Juliet on the beach with the bottle of booze, as you know,
the sad
freighter went boom.
Right. Right, that we just lost all the people we were previously kissing.
It's a real Captain Jack Sparrow, Elizabeth Swan, even though Johnny Depp's a creep moment for me when that happens. So we'll talk about it. But
just great. I mean, the whole Sawyer and Juliet thing
is
just
so
great.
Good. So I'm going to start my campaign.
It's one of the ones you really don't see coming. Wow.
All right, guys. Oh, wait. No, wait. We done?
I'm done.
We done? Wrapping it up. All right.
Yeah,
I'm wrapping it up for this week. Neo, next week, what are we doing?
We're going to meet Kevin Johnson, who is, again, just Michael. But it also is the return, I read, of Walt. Walt's in this one.
Walt.
And,
Tom.
And Tom Friendly.
Most important. Did I step on your thunder?
No, that's okay. Most important element of Meet Kevin Johnson, I think, is
what about
is the Tom part.
What about the cork and death of Jeremy Bentham? Or simply Le Cork.
Or Across the Cork.
Some like it. Cork. Until, okay.
Until we meet Kevin Johnson, where can people find more of your work on the internet? We'll start this week with Joanna Robinson.
You can find me on Twitter at Joe Wrote This. You can find me at VanityFair.com. I am covering a smattering of shows over on the Vanity Fair Still Watching podcast. We're wrapping up The Undoing. We are kicking off The Flight Attendant. We're only doing two episodes about that, but that is a super fun HBO Max show that you guys should all be watching. And then we got two episodes of The Mandalorian to talk about, the Thanksgiving episode and the finale episode. So that's all what's coming up on that, and you should tune in.
And Mr. Neil Miller.
Well, you know, you can always get me over at filmschoolrejects.com on Twitter, at rejects, at one perfect shot. That's also me. And don't forget to follow at Storm Podcast on Twitter, where I believe we canceled the Kistery, but we'll do other fun stuff.
And I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can follow me on Twitter at DA7E. You could also listen to my other podcast, Fighting in the War Room, where we talk about different pop culture things. And I will be here at the end of every episode of the Storm of Lost Rewatch podcast, reminding you to not fall down.